Conti here with another episode of the CDC Tech Life podcast coming to you from the Charleston Digital Corridor's flagship incubator on Morrison Drive. If you haven't checked out our last episode, we spoke with Zach McNamara, the CEO of Portside Technology, a resident company here at the Charleston Tech Center. In this episode, we'll be talking with another new resident of the CDC incubator. Cognitos is a generative AI startup based in San Jose, California, who recently chose Charleston as their East Coast hub. This episode is brought to you by the Charleston County Economic Development Department. They're dedicated to recruiting new business, growing existing industry, and improving Charleston's business climate. Visit them to learn more at charlestoncountydevelopment.org. Our guest on this episode of the Charleston Digital Corridor Tech Life podcast is Drayton Wade. Drayton is Head of Strategy and Operations for Cognitos. Welcome to the show, Drayton.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming. Let's start with an overview of Cognitos, what problem you solve, solutions you offer, and who your customers are.
If you think of Cognitos, and actually where the name comes from, at the end of the day, it's the cognition operating system. Mm-hmm. And the core problem that our founder and CEO, Vinny Gill, set out to solve was that up until this time, we've been building machines, and then we've been teaching people how to think and communicate like machines, to be able to actually use them, to be able to use computers, and to get the most benefit out of that. But that's really backwards, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about it, I don't build a car for me to serve the car. I build a car for it to serve me. Mm-hmm. And so we should be building machines and build technology that actually thinks and, more importantly, communicates the way that we communicate. And so Benny had an experience with his son where he realized that his son learning to program now in the 2020s took about the same amount of time as it took him back several decades ago, and wanted to solve that by making it to where instead now programming is effectively in English. And so where Cognitos functions is a lot of companies today want to build applications, and they want to particularly build processes to automate a lot of the manual repetitive work that we as people aren't really good at doing, but they can't because they have to then learn these other languages, or they have to learn this complex drag and drop technology called RPA, which is really challenging and requires you to hire a small subset of people to serve, you know, several billion business users. And so Cognitos, by making automation and by making essentially a programming language in English, we're now making this accessible, an AI accessible to everyday business users like myself, who are not technical at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do recall reading that on the website, and it was a really interesting story, and I love the analogy you added onto it with the car, and it really did resonate with me. How I got involved with technology was really, you know, self-taught. You know, I went to, you know, college up in New England for English, and I started with writing, you know, what Benny called pseudo code, right? You know, and it's how do you break down the problem? And that's the piece on the website says that's how humans think, and the real hard work of programming, and why I never sort of went fully into engineering, software engineering as a career, and ended up on the product management side, was the hard part was taking that pseudo code and turning it into sort of an actually operating program in some language. And so much time and energy is invested in doing that. So, you know, I think it's a brilliant approach.
It reminds me a lot of like a childhood game as well, the way we approach it today. You know, everyone has a little game where, you know, you're in kindergarten and you play the telephone game, you whisper in someone's ear. And by the time it gets back to the original person, it's something totally different. And that's effectively what we're doing with programming, and especially in the automation space where I'm from today. We have the business user that, you know, they may have been doing that process for 30 years and they know it in and out. Mm-hmm. They're having to communicate how to do it to a developer, and sometimes there's even a person in between them to try to translate between. And then anytime anything varies off a standard path, you have this back and forth. And so we're creating this unnecessary amount of meetings and communication, all because the program and the business user who actually has that subject matter knowledge can't talk. Yeah. So by removing that, we get rid of the telephone game. Now people can build what they want to build.
That's great. Tell us about your role and what brought you to Cognitos.
You know, like many things, I think it's networks and people you know that ultimately end up getting you connected. But in my role, I oversee all of our corporate functions as well as what we call customer experience. So that would be everything from pre-sales and solutions engineering to post-sales and customer support. What brought me to Cognitos is a little bit roundabout, but I've been in the automation space for quite some time, having worked early stage at a company called UiPath, which is in the RPA category, and then through the IPO over there, where I led the strategic partners team for North and South America. After the IPO at UiPath, I don't come from a formal business background. Traditionally, I was political science, some counterterrorism work, and so I said, you know, I'm reaching a point in my career where I really need to have that underlying finance and accounting, and so I went back to business school up at Dartmouth. And while I was there, though, frankly, within a few months, I was getting bored. Once you've been in the startup life for a while, you miss that pace. And you
especially
miss
going to academia.
You miss that energy and kind of the chaos a little bit. And a friend of mine, as I was like, all right, I think I can work on a startup while still being in school. A friend of mine connected me with Benny and said, hey, Benny's working on something. And I don't know if it's really, you know, legit like what's going to happen. But if this happens, it'll not only change automation, but it'll change, you know, SaaS. And so I flew out to meet Benny. Benny was working on the product with several engineers on our team at the time. We had raised a pre-seed round and were building the core of the product. This would have been fall and early winter of 21, and needed someone who knew the automation space, as we knew that was the first market we wanted to tackle as a company. Needed someone who knew the business side of the house. And so we met, and from there kind of realized the tech and the vision was something I was interested in by solving all the problems that I saw in RPA and a lot of that kind of telephone game that I mentioned. And so came on board, and then we raised our seed round and then Series A, and here we are.
That's great. Well, and here we are in Charleston. You know, this recent news story announcement about Charleston being a hub for Cognitos going forward. Why Charleston, and how do you think it complements Cognitos' existing presence in the Bay Area?
I'd say I'm from South Carolina originally, from the upstate in Rock Hill, and then went to undergrad at Clemson. So it's always been a dream that you know, to be able to work in tech in Charleston. And I'd worked remotely previously when we lived in Charleston, but you know, didn't know if that would be a reality. Needed to make sure it made rational sense. But as we started to grow as a company, we knew that we needed a East Coast hub. And one thing that I think we found to be very true is in San Jose, our headquarters is in Santana Row, which is this really beautiful shopping area. There's tons of restaurants and bars and things to do. And it's somewhere where people actually want to come to the office. We're very big believers that despite COVID, and certainly there's going to be some remote work, there's going to be a lot of in-person work. And in the early stages of a startup, you cannot replicate that in-person work to the same extent remotely. And so we were talking and looking at the East Coast and thinking, okay, we need some presence here, both for time zone perspective, because we have global customers, but we got to find somewhere that people want to be. We got to find somewhere that people find entertaining and where they'll actually want to come to the office. If we're in some dreary office building, that's not going to work. And, you know, notice that post-COVID, more and more people are open to the idea of living in Charleston than before. Everyone thought you had to be in New York or Boston or San Francisco. And so ultimately, we had kind of serendipitously our first solutions engineer hire who leads that team. She was out of Charleston remote. And so we said, look, this place has the things that we look for. It's in a state that's growing very, very fast from a GDP per capita. There's more and more business coming in. There's more and more capital that's coming in. It's a place people want to be. And on top of all of that, we had connections. So through Clemson and other things, we knew that we should be able to help solve some of the challenges that maybe South Carolina traditionally had in hiring, you know, workforce, and ended up launching here.
What's your impression so far of the Charleston Tech Center, this physical presence here?
So I lived here for 4 years when my wife was in medical school, working for a startup that ultimately didn't go anywhere at that time, and then moved away for 4 years and moved back. And I'll say a couple of things that have been different. One, this place is amazing. So I remember when the digital corridor was in the little buildings over
there. Was East flagship Bay. One and flagship two on East Bay.
Starbucks, which is also no longer
it's
there.
It's all a big hotel now, I think.
Right. And so I'll say that, see the development here is incredible. And what's funny is we took a video of the rooftop and sent that to our people in San Jose. And they're all like, what the heck? From now on in San Jose, we have to find a place that has...
That's funny.
Funny, so kind of up the ante, I think, in that sense. But I found here has been great location. The proximity to restaurants and Evan's Oats and the Daily is something our employees like. It's been much easier to hire.
Yeah.
I have people that are actually moving here because they want to be in Charleston, which to me was a great sign. Yeah. And I'll tell you the other thing that has me so excited about Charleston and South Carolina in general is I've realized since we moved back, just from people in our neighborhood, there's a lot more tech workers here than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just working from home.
Yeah.
But what we've also realized is they're working from home because there's not the opportunities for them to come in the office and work for companies. And so I think there's a huge pool of workforce, not just salespeople, but otherwise, that places like the tech center that provide that great office environment will start to draw those people in and really get a nice community moving forward.
Earlier, you mentioned the seed round and a Series A round. There was recently another thing in the news with an article from Sequoia about Cognitos as a company to watch in sort of what they call the Act Two of generative AI. Talk to me a little bit about that article and what you feel like it does for Cognitos as a business.
It was a great thing to see because Sequoia obviously was one of the very first venture funds out in the Valley with an incredible track record. And what we have seen since then is a few things. One, out of the 10 that they had in that category, were one of the newer ones, definitely one of the smallest, which was really exciting for us that, hey, our vision and what we are working on is resonating with others. So it was certainly a stamp of approval and validation in that respect. The bigger reason I think we were included, though, is that we have projects and sizable projects with Fortune 500 companies in production.
Yeah.
So a lot of the conversations that we're having, not only with CEOs, CFOs, CIOs of large companies and mid-market companies, but also with the consulting firms who also kind of have a validating effect within the broader tech ecosystem. So the Deloitte's of the world, the Infosys and Tata's, we're noticing that they're all saying there's a lot of POCs going on when it comes to generative AI. There's not a lot of that's actually been pushed into production where you've figured out the safety concerns, where you've actually been able to see the ROI that you want to see, and you're starting to see scale.
Yeah.
And we have that. And that was a big part of certainly where Coastal Ventures came in on this latest round. And that was a big part of why Sequoia decided to include us in that map. It'll certainly change. That map will be very different a year from now than it is now. But there are a little bit of a cohort of us from UiPath at Cognitos. And so to be included in the exact same grouping as them, despite being a less than 3-year-old company was a really, really cool thing to see.
Yeah. Well, it's great that, even though you've sort of been put in that category and projected in that category, you've still got something that really makes you unique in the space. And like you said, that you're actually starting to do things with big companies at scale, where I think a lot of companies are still just exploring different applications. And
whatnot. Yeah, that's been the most surprising thing for us so far is the rate of expansion in accounts. Because we go into accounts, we find, initial use case typically.
Yep.
But how quickly we're finding a lot of other areas to work has been wonderful. We're now in a lot of accounts with, 5-6 processes that are moving into production or already in production. That also brings a lot of growing pains, though, because we are not staffed yet to really be able to, handle tens and twenties of processes in production across a lot of accounts. So it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a good segue to talk a little bit about the Series A investment that you just mentioned from Coastal Ventures. What is it specifically you think that that investment will help you do as a company?
First, I have to say, Coastal Ventures, again, when you talk about, when you start off with a startup, you have the vision in mind, but you don't know if it's going to resonate with the market. You don't know if it's going to resonate with customers. You don't know if it's going to resonate with the capital, allocators as well. And so that investment of Coastal coming in, a true tier one historic firm with the node Coastal as one of the early investors in OpenAI, was another one of those moments that just it gives you a boost of energy. Like, wow, we are onto something here. Where that's really helping is in a few different areas. One, Bosla Ventures themselves are great partners in helping us think through the broader vision. The company is playing in the automation market today, but there's a lot of other opportunities long-term, particularly around the data and becoming the business journal and effect of the companies that we are serving. And so Kosla is really helping just from a strategic partnership perspective there. They're also helping in thinking through kind of how we navigate the large language model landscape as more and more of these pop up, which we love seeing because it allows us to work with more tools at the end of the day. But the key areas, one is within the product. We want to push a, you know, what we're calling self-service, but a version that anyone can actually interact with and try and use in their daily life, you know, in 2024. And so there's a lot of investment that needs to go into not just having that ready, but building that community of Cognitive users more broadly, and then hiring. Being in a market downturn over the last couple of years, we intentionally did not go with the throw bodies, overhire, then figure out the capital financing later, but took a more measured approach. And so now we're needing to hire, now that we have the capital, you know, in key areas like customer experience or additional sales reps, marketing, you know, as well as engineers. We always want to be an engineering-heavy company in that sense.
Well, in addition to hiring, what are some of the other biggest challenges and maybe some of the opportunities you see that excite you that are facing Cognitos as you scale?
You know, I think one of the challenges is when you're bringing something to market that is effectively a new category entirely, figuring out that messaging to really resonate is challenging. You have to message against the status quo and most of the traditional, you know, RPA. As we're not in that category, we have to position ourselves against them as well. But they've been around for 20 years. Most people think they're like newer technology, they're pretty old. But then defining that new category in a way that resonates and is something that people can understand is challenging. So we're constantly iterating, I think, on the messaging and the marketing side of the house. The other is being global from the beginning. So from a company structure or company support, we have customers now in Australia, in Europe, in India. Soon, I think, we'll have some in the Middle East, in the U.S. So how to build a company globally from very early stages is a challenge. And the last thing I say is, this is kind of a fun challenge, but the space is so rapid. When we raised our speed round, we go into VC to VC telling them that the future is going to be in English. And this is before ChatGPT came out. Everyone knew about GPT. Everyone knew about large language models. But a lot of the VCs kept saying, no, no, no. People don't want to write things in English. They want it to be drag and drop. It's easier because people are visual. And we kept saying, no, it's going to be in English. And then ChatGPT came out. And immediately switched to English. So this last round was a little easier. But I'd say that we have to make sure that we carve out time internally to always, you know, stay up to date on the new advancements, which is great. There's so much funding going into this space. There's going to be a lot of technological advancements. And with our platform, we can use and benefit those things. But we have to reserve time to think about it and not just be, you know, reactive in startup.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about the tension between sort of written or spoken language and visual language, right? And, you know, I don't know that those things are necessarily at odds. Like, I think if you look at the history of interfaces over time, and, you know, I've got a background in UI in addition to product management, you see that eventually folks figure out it's always got to be sort of multimodal. And so you're seeing it with, you know, ChatGPT and other, you know, expressions of generative AI, a very sort of dialogue-based interface. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that be not replaced, but complemented with more visual elements, you know, in the future, particularly in, you know, in the space that you're talking about with RPA, where, yeah, people communicate, you know, verbally, but there's nothing, you know, that can replace, particularly from process flows, being able to visualize the flows and where they fork and where they merge and all of that. I think that's an exciting, you know, as you said, an exciting challenge.
For sure. No, I think that's a great insight. And it's something we're building into our product.
Yeah, that's great.
So one of the things that, way that we're different is we try to build the product in the way that people operate. So if I'm a person and I'm wanting to automate, you know, something that I do every day of maybe it's reconciling purchase orders with SAP. I have the standard way I do it. I would be able to go through those steps. And then if a variation hits, only then would I think about how do I solve that variation And I may make a note of next yep. time I see that, then I want to solve mm-hmm. it. And so we work the same way. You start by building the English mm-hmm. step by step, the way mm-hmm. it should work. And then when it gets encountered, we learn those exceptions. Yeah. Now, some people are visual, as you mentioned. And so actually what we're building into the product as well is that ability to, as we log all those mm-hmm. exceptions, we can actually create, and using a large mm-hmm. language model, in real time, the process flow mm-hmm. in the traditional, you know, yep. diagram approach that not only shows the happy path, but it shows all the different mm-hmm. exceptions, the percentage of time that goes down those exceptions, you know, just from people operating, not That's having great. To create something separately.
That's great. Well, Drayton Wade, Head of Strategy and Operations for Cognitos, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Where can listeners go to learn more about Cognitos?
So you can certainly go to our website at www.cognitos.com. We also host podcasts where we bring in different people more specifically to the generative AI space mm-hmm. called Generative AI on podcast and Apple. And lastly, our LinkedIn is probably our most active digital channel.
Yeah, definitely encourage folks to go check out the website. A lot of great resources out there to learn about the space and to keep up with what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed learning about Cognitos as much as I did. Generative AI has gained a lot of momentum in the technology industry, and it's great to see companies like Cognitos explore different applications of the technology. I want to thank our sponsor for this episode, the Charleston County Economic Development Department. They're dedicated to recruiting new business, growing existing industry, and improving Charleston's business climate. Visit them to learn more at charlestoncountydevelopment.org. I also want to thank Ernest and the team at the Charleston Digital Corridor for their partnership and support. Look for us wherever you find your favorite podcast, and while you're there, leave us a rating or review and subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and of course, follow the Charleston Digital Corridor to stay up to date on all of the happenings here in Charleston. Thanks for listening. I'm Rich Conti, and this has been the CDC Tech Life Podcast.